Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bobby Moore and Sir Jeff Hurst, the Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, a Paolo Di Canio, a West Ham United. We celebrate our victories, we stick together in defeat. I'm proud of our history, the West Ham United, more than just a podcast.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. This is more than just a podcast. Season 10, episode 25. It's Tuesday and not a Monday because we had an FA Cup draw up north. No Booches tonight. If it's not a Monday, it confuses them. But back, obviously, always. I say always, but actually, Nigel wasn't available, but the Shed Man has made him available. Good evening, Nigel. Where are you and what are you doing?
I'm in me ass.
You never go in your shed anymore. You're a fair weather shed.
It's a bit cold. You say that. I was in there Saturday.
You put
I put a heater in there, but it was so crap.
Yeah.
Well, we did.
Oh yeah, you did your propaganda. More of that later.
Yeah, and I was frozen.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. So, anyway, you're in your house. Welcome,
yeah,
Nigel. Thank you for making the time. I know you had quite a lot on tonight. Thank you for making the time. Also back, it was going to be actually myself and Len. At one point, it was just me and Len talking. Probably done it in 22 minutes. Canningtown Len, where are you? What are you doing?
I'm in the studio after a tough day doing a podcast with you.
Yeah. Because you're always available, aren't you? I don't think you've ever said no.
No,
I've never said. That's not true. Len, there was one time not so long ago where you weren't feeling all that well.
That's right, the first time,
said,
wasn't it?
I can't do it.
I couldn't do it.
No, just a few weeks ago, and you said, "Oh, I've got a bit of a problem. I'm not right up to it." But that's the only time you've refused an offer of a podcast.
I can't remember.
It's good to hear. It's good to hear you anyway.
Thanks, man. Ever so nice to you.
Anyway, we didn't record on Monday because we had a game against Stockport County. Obviously, they beat us in the League Cup in 1996. Were you there, Nigel?
No, I wasn't there, no. I watched it, though.
Len, were you? Yeah? What was the score?
1-0 was predicted.
Who was the manager? No. I'm talking about Stockport County in 1996.
Oh,
1996.
The manager, I'll tell you what, all right. The manager for West Ham was Harry Redknapp. The manager for Stockport County, I think you'll find, was Dave Jones.
I think you're right.
What is it?
What
was the score then?
Front.
We're talking about the replay, not the
We lost
2-1. Yeah.
We drew 1-0, I think, at Upton Park, and then we lost 2-1. Yeah.
That's right.
Was it Tony Cotty?
Sam goal.
Or Julian Dix?
I don't know. I've asked a question.
That's what I was just saying. Is it Tony Cotty or Julian Dix?
I don't know.
All right.
I think it was Julian Dix.
Ludo McCloskey was Julian in goal.
Dix put us 1-0 up. Yeah.
Slaven Bilic was playing in that game.
Yes, it. We put a good team out. To be fair, I do remember that. But
they were in December. That was 25 years ago.
Yeah, they were League One back then.
No, September. September. Of course, I wrote a story.
I thought it was later in the league. No, oh, so you've paid attention then.
Well, I write so many stories. Sometimes it's hard to keep on to the detail, you know. I put a video. So Stockport County actually streamed the whole thing, the whole 1.5 hour game on YouTube. So I put that up before the game.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. The 1996 game, that is.
Yeah, I guess you was talking about that. I mean, I just remembered that it was another rain. It seems to always rain in Stockport, doesn't it?
Yeah,
enough, it does,
that it did tip down with rain, and it was Dowie's head off. Was Dowie's head of the equaliser?
I can't recall.
It's a long time
ago.
I think
it might
have been
that Brett Angel got the winner, didn't he?
Brett Angel was the one, yeah. Yes.
Anyway, it wasn't to be. I haven't managed to look it up, and it wasn't to be repeated. Quite an easy.
Dix did score
over.
Our
oh, here
goal.
We go.
So Dix
was it
did
Dix?
Score.
You've looked
goal.
It up now.
Here yeah,
look,
I've got
so
it.
So the team,
I didn't realise that my mate came on as a sub. Danny Williamson,
Ludo McCloskey
played as well.
Mark Reaper, Mark Bowen, Slaven Bilic, Julian Dix, Michael Hughes, John Munker, Dimitrescu, Ian Bishop played, Hugo Porfirio, whatever his name
Porfirio.
Was. And,
Porfirio.
Yeah, and Ian Dowie all played.
Yeah.
Danny
Williamson, you forgot.
And Danny Williamson.
My goal,
but it wasn't to be repeated. We walked it. It was easy, wasn't it? Easy. I know we left it to the 85th minute, but it was never in doubt. Let's start with you, Len.
Yeah.
The result was in no doubt ever. You said 1-0. You got it spot on. What was the problem?
You gone all the big Cadbury smash on me. I didn't hear what you said, mate.
I said the result was never in doubt. What what did you think of the game?
What did I think of the game?
Yeah.
Quite expectedly harder than we'd imagine. There's always seems to be like that in these games, but obviously the weather didn't help things. That was a great leveller. And I can't criticise some of the players' performances too much in that weather. I don't think we was ever going to struggle. It was just a question of when we was going to score and how. And naturally, an airborne ball was always going to be better than something with the ball on the floor, really. And that happened to be the case. So we got the important corner. Finished it off in the next round. Move on, really. Wasn't great, was it? It was nothing happened in the first half and not much happened in the second, but, you know.
Was it the pitch? Was it playing non-league side that's difficult to do when they try and
little
stop you playing
of everything,
the game?
Isn't there?
Or was it just West Ham didn't really take it very seriously?
No, I thought we took it seriously enough. I don't think the break helps us. Sometimes when we got a little bit of a break, it feels like a little bit of waiting time since the last game. Oh, I might be wrong there.
Yeah.
That never seems to help. I don't think it helped Everton when they played us. It certainly didn't help us.
Yeah.
When we played last night, I was actually looking forward to seeing a bit of some fresh faces that didn't happen. which is a little bit...
Well, it was a strong side, wasn't it?
It was very strong.
Very strong.
Very surprisingly strong.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's... I sound disappointed, don't I? But, you know, we won, we're through. Okay, I don't like the idea of having a draw two rounds ahead to see who we're playing. But Liverpool and Man United don't scare me. So, you know, if you want to win the cup, you've got to beat them. And until recently, there always used to be a case of whoever played Man United, or when West Ham played Man United, the winner used to go on and win it. But that disappeared a few years ago, didn't it? Let's look forward.
I think last time Man United, not to
they
say...
They did win it. Of course they did.
Yeah.
Last season at Upton Park, they did win it again.
So after we'd knocked Liverpool out.
Yeah. So is that still staying, that record? Because 64, we beat them to win. 77, they beat us, didn't they?
Recently, they beat us in 85 and went on to win it.
That's right.
Against Everton. Didn't they beat us in 83 as well?
Yeah, I think they did.
And then went on to win it, beat Brighton. Yeah.
Someone will tell us anyway, in the comments.
I'm sure the FA Cup's ours this year. You know, we just got to beat Doncaster, Man United or Liverpool and beat Man City, and then we might be in a final.
Yeah, Doncaster won't be easy.
No, it won't. Let's just do a little stat attack. West Ham had 62% of possession away from home in Edgeley Park. We had, obviously, they had 38. We had 12 shots on target. We had 12 shots, two on target. Well, that's what BBC says. 12 shots, two on target. They had five shots.
Yes, we had 12 shots. You said on target. I was like...
Yeah, I said, I corrected myself. Yeah. 12 shots, two on target. They had five, one on target. But they did quite well, didn't they, Nigel? How did you see it? And obviously, the person everyone was slagging off, Craig Dawson, gets the match-winning goal.
Yeah, it was, the pitch was a great leveller. It was great to see. Yeah. Actually, a pitch like that, to be fair. And it was good to see. I think we coped pretty well with it, for me. Normally, when you get a team like that, they will defend and fight for their lives, which is Stockport did. And then what they'll do is that because of fitness levels, they'll run out of energy in the last normally 20 to 15 minutes. And I think what happens now is that years ago, Stockport would have been part-time, but they're not, they're full-time. Even though they're non-league, they're a fully professional club. And I think that showed in the fitness that their players were still fighting all the way to the end of the game. So full credit to them and their manager. I think with games in hand and everything, they possibly could go second in the league. They're doing a lot better than I ever thought that they were doing. So, and they were never really out of the game, but they never really troubled us at the back. But then again, we didn't really trouble them too much. The fact they had one shot on target, which I think was at the end of the game, shows it when I say they've not troubled us. They've not... To score a goal, you've got to have a shot on target. Yeah? So you've got to trouble. So if you look, we had a lot of ball. We had a lot of chances. Well, no, he flapped at that corner, didn't he? Where he punched it into the air, a slippery ball. And the thing about
that's exactly
wet
what
conditions
the
like that
said,
is, the thing about the wet conditions like that, it is a great leveller. Because if you look, a lot of the time we were over it in passes because it was skidding off of the surface. Then in the second half, the ball was getting caught up. So they think the ball's going out, but it don't go out. I think Lanzini got caught out once where he was trying to shepherd the ball out and the ball got caught up in the water and he got the Stockport bloke nicked the ball off of him. All in all,
right team,
it's
right
a tough game to play.
I mean, right team.
Well, the fact that he had the call on, a lot of people get frustrated when you put a lesser team out and you get beat, or you don't do as well, or they want to think that we want to go for the cup. It's weird because we had the two draws before the game. We're looking at the fifth round before we've beat the third round. And a lot of people were thinking, oh, are we going to be out anyway?
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a downer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was almost as if Moyes would have liked to have waited, because he might have thought, you know what, I might chuck a few kids out tonight, because what's the chances, really? It's a 50-50 chance. When you know that, because you're always looking for an easy draw to get, you know, into the sixth round when you look at the teams available to be drawn. But as everybody says, you've got to beat everybody. So, or you've got to beat a good team to get to the final at some point.
It's a fifth round, the quarterfinal. If you think back, is that right?
No, sixth round's quarterfinal. So if you look back to our last good run in the FA Cup, funny enough, which was in 2016, last season at Upton Park, we beat Liverpool in a replay after the fourth round. We got a draw at Anfield. If you look at the Man United game in the sixth round, if VAR was about, Man United's equaliser wouldn't have stood.
Well, I agree.
Because Schweinsteiger, wasn't it, pushed Adrian, I believe, for their goal.
We were unlucky not to get a penalty last night. If VAR had been there, we'd have got a penalty.
Yeah.
Were we?
I thought so, yeah.
Did you watch the game, Nigel?
Yeah, no, I watched it all.
Any flashpoints? Apart from the fireworks.
No, but look.
Flashpoints, fireworks.
What flashpoints?
That's a good laugh.
Flashpoints
is a joke. Fireworks.
The one thing that shows about the game, a Blood and Thunder Cup game, was no yellow cards, no red cards, only one offside in the game.
Did you hear afterwards, by the way, just going back to flashpoints, what the fireworks were about?
Yeah, some 15-year-old
during the game.
Trouble, wasn't he?
Yeah,
some 15-year-old was run over by a police car on Boxing Day, and it was in honour of him.
Yeah.
It did go on for a while, and I wondered, because Mike Riley was looking around going, what shall I do? And
Mike
no one
Riley?
His whistle. Well, what was his name? Who was it then?
Mike Dean.
Who was Mike Dean, whatever. Mike, whatever. They're all men in black.
He wore green, didn't he?
I know. What are the rules? What are the rules? If a firework display is going on above the heads, it must be really off-putting. What are the rules?
I think the rules are, he played on till there was a natural break in the game, wasn't there? One of our players had gone down. And then I think what he was saying is, which is said in the press, but you could see him saying to, I think, Noble and Rice, I can't hear what people are saying in my ear. So he just wanted to let the fireworks finish.
Yeah. He was scared.
Did you run your
Noble
picture?
Was scared.
Is that what
you... Of course I run the picture.
Mate, what's the story?
What do you reckon the headline?
The poor bloke is shivering in the rain, watching the fireworks, and you go, oh, he's scared. Of course he ain't scared.
So what was my headline this morning on Mark Noble? Hammers spooked by fireworks.
Yeah.
It was a good headline. I thought so.
Maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, the gutter press.
Anyway, let's talk. I mean, there's not, as you say, it's not a lot to talk about the game. I wasn't completely sure about the substitutes. I would have bought on that young striker a bit earlier.
Go on, what's his name?
Mido. Mipo. I don't know his second name. Don't try and ask me to pronounce it. It was good that Ben Johnson played. I just thought, you know, their whole team. I was saying to the missus, she went, why can't you beat Stockport? And I went, do you know what? I said, I'd like to play a bit of poker. And I said, you know what? The hardest people to play poker are the people who don't know how to play poker, right? Because if you're playing with someone,
you can't read them.
Texas no hold'em. You can't read them because they don't know what they're doing. How do you read someone when they don't know what they're doing? Now, I know that's not a really fair analogy.
To be fair, Sean, I play poker against you, and I'm pretty sure I cleaned you a couple of times. And
I'm not sure you did.
I think
but
I did.
Anyway, but you know, it's hard to. It's easier to West Ham slip up on these games. It's harder to play a non-league or lower league side than sometimes because this is their cup game, not just their cup game, but their FA Cup game. You know, this is the big thing. You know, they were crowding us out and doing every tactic in the book to stop us playing a Premier League kind of game, to frustrate us. They were using the weather. The pitch was bloody awful. The pitch was soggy. I know that's how Billy Bonds and everything play, but you know, these silky Premier League players who play on carpets didn't know what to do, you know, on that soggy ground. So, you know, fair play. Stockport gave a good account and they should be very proud of themselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about who wasn't available because we've got
Since the Premier League, quickly, last thing then. You have been doing your homework. Since the Premier League started, or since football was reborn in 1992, how many Premier League teams have been knocked out of the FA Cup by non-league teams?
I would imagine it's quite a lot. 15.
Two.
Oh, really?
To non-league teams. Only two.
Non-league. Oh. Crawley's not non-league, is it? That's
they're League Two.
I don't know where Crawley is.
Coventry City, where they
won. Crawley is Sussex.
Coventry is Sutton United, wasn't it?
But that weren't Premier League. That was 1988.
Oh, time flies.
I don't
mean
to be disrespectful, but I don't go below the Championship, really. I've got no interest in League One and League Two. Oh, except for AFC Wimbledon. No, I don't really. So, Belbrana and Fredericks were self-isolating. I did write a story that possibly they tested positive, but I got told off medical confidentiality. And I was told that I was told to refer to the manager's comments that two players were self-isolating and that no players are currently tested positive, so that's what I'm going to say. So Belbrana and Brian Fredericks were not available for COVID related issues. Probably the biggest surprise of the evening was Issa Diop had travelled to Stockport but picked up a mysterious injury apparently he picked up an injury on Sunday, still travelled because he was only 70%. Alan Irvine said this, and had a fitness test on Monday morning, and was declared he failed that fitness test and was not, you know, this is a guy, by the way, after he got COVID with Moyes and Cullen in that cup game, which I can't remember who we were playing. He's only played two appearances since. He played one against Palace and one against Arsenal, from memory. One was only a substitute appearance for 27 minutes. He's played 117 minutes. He got taken with the squad to Leeds and also didn't make the squad, didn't make the bench. And we're led to believe that it's not long COVID and he hasn't fallen out with a manager. And it really is just unlucky that that he has different reasons why he can't play. I don't know what to make of it. But a senior source told me today, it's the truth, Sean. There is no conspiracy theory. So we're going to have to trust that he's not leaving in January. And I've been told he's not leaving in January. And the manager does like him. And he's just been really unlucky. So let's take it as that. Masuaku's probably at least 6 weeks away, maybe more. He's still not able to train properly. So the question for you guys, obviously, you know, mute when you're coughing, Nigel, is obviously we haven't recorded since Allaire and Snodgrass were sold. Just to recap for our listeners, I'm sure they will remember, but Alain was sold for £20 million or £20.2 million to Ajax in a four-year deal.
Ajax.
We get four... Ajax. We get Ajax. We get £4 million up front and then £4 million a year for the next 4 years in an installment plan. We still owe about £11 million to Frankfurt, that we still got to pay off again in installments. And there is no add-on clause, and there's no sell-on clause. There are no add-ons. That's it. Came out of the blue. He admitted that he'd been speaking to him for months, but David Moyes said, look, this came out of the blue and we just took it. We've got no replacement lined up. So let's talk to you both about that. Good deal, bad deal. He had no plans to let him go, said David Moyes. Nigel?
I think it's good for Haller. At the end of the day, it obviously wasn't working for us. And if the you know, there's a chance to move him on, I think for everybody's sake, it's obviously, you know, it's not going to pan out the way Moyes plays. And Haller wasn't happy. You could see that on the pitch. And having watched the second half of the Ajax PSV game,
yeah,
at the weekend, you saw a totally different Haller.
He smiled afterwards.
Well, and he was smart. He was running around during the game. He scored, disallowed by VAR. He set up the equaliser goal for Ajax. Ajax were playing with Dusan Tadic and Anthony, a bloke called Anthony, in more of a proper three, sort of the type of system he was used to at Frankfurt. He's teamed up with the manager that had him at Utrecht, where he scored in Dutch football. He knows Dutch football. Mm-hmm. He knows the manager. He knows the style. It's not a square peg in a round hole, is it?
Yeah. And he said West Ham's system didn't suit him. I mean, he wasn't. I don't think he was being disrespectful. He just said
no. But at the end of the day, he was brought, and this is the thing: when he signed his contract, and the club was sold to him, it was sold to him by Pellegrini, probably playing in a certain way. And it's not panned out, has it? When he was bought, he was going to be the centre focus. He was going to have Antonio wide of him and probably Lanzini or Anderson wide left of him. And it never really happened for him. I thought he showed his quality, that he was a good striker in the first opening 10 games. And then after that, coupled with, you know, the loss of Fabianski and the worst goalkeeper, you know, to get a constant run out in the team that I've seen, Roberto going in goal, cost. I mean, that injury to Fabianski, if you look at what it's actually cost West Ham, I would say it cost Pellegrini his job. And it's cost us lots of money in the transfer window and replacing the players that failed under Pellegrini, that didn't perform well under Moyes.
Good point, that.
Purely because of that injury.
Coming to you, Len. Good deal, 20 million.
Well, you could say it's a good deal for everyone because 20 million was his current value under the circumstances of what...
Yeah.
Of what...
Once you depreciate it over what you've been there, you know, you write off any asset over a period of time, you could argue that...
Good move for him.
If we'd have left it longer, we could have got less for him in the summer.
Yeah. Moyes gets his chance to get his own man in. Good move for Haller.
Yeah.
Disappointed that...
Although, no, here's the key, right? And I didn't say it. Well, I am going to say it. You know, we've got no replacement lined up. Moyes has made it clear he will not panic buy. He will not buy for the sake of it. And he's happy to continue. If he can't find the right player, he's happy to continue with the rest of the season without a replacement striker because he says, I've got options with Lanzini, Benrahma, and particularly Yarmolenko. He's got this belief in himself that he's turned two midfielders into strikers. And if necessary, he could turn someone like Yarmolenko into a striker because... He's done it before. You know, Yarmolenko, I think, has played a striker for Ukraine and maybe that team in Moscow that he played for.
I don't believe it. I think he's just talking clever. That's just what an experienced manager would say. He's just, he doesn't want to sound desperate because he knows it gives him a better chance to get the guy he wants.
All I can tell you is, as we speak on Tuesday night, right, I know there's loads of stories, and I know, and Clarence, you, we ran lots of reports as well, but nothing is close. Nothing is close, right? There's no last-minute negotiations or a medical about to happen. So if you read that, it's not close. Now, things can happen, but not in, you know, I'll be flabbergasted if anyone signs in the next 3 or 4 days.
But this is a problem. The reason why nothing's close, Sean, is because it's hard for us to sign players because of the team we are. It's not hard for Ajax to sign players for £20 million.
It's hard to sign players in...
Well, Ajax didn't struggle.
Well, I know that, but it's hard to sign players. You could say they took a gamble. It's hard to sign players in January anyway. In the pandemic, no one wants to release the good players. They want to offload their crap players like we did, you know? And you hope a manager sees something else. And they're the kind of things we'd be offered. And that's why a lot of the people you see, look at the headlines of some of the strikers. I think we've been linked with 20 strikers. I was talking to Stel, Lions United, and talking through his list. And I was giving him a percentage out of 10 on where it would happen. And I think the biggest we got to was Josh King on 8. But everyone else was 2, 3. Arnautovic was 1. You know, not going to happen.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, Sean. When there's a buyer, there's a seller. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. But most of the stories, some of them are pure speculation. Some of them for agents. But a lot of them are being offered to us and not ones we're looking for. So our list is one thing, but lots of people have been offered to us, including the striker from Lipsburg, you know, Freddie Canute's client. But anyway, going back, there is no transfer news, well, basically.
Yeah, but one thing in that transfer, and it does play into the fact that we get these lists and nothing's really happening, is the sale of Haller exposes Moyes' tactics and how actually narrow the type of strikers we're actually can buy. So if Haller's not going to succeed, it's possible. Do you buy a replacement that's similar to Haller? Though the tactics didn't work for him, so then you...
I don't think so. Right, I think you buy someone like...
Similar to Antonio, then?
Yeah.
I think you're looking for someone with pace, flexibility, adaptability.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is, let's name some players, then, that would straight replace Antonio. Not that are available to buy. Well, let's just name some players.
That Simmer chap from Czech Republic.
Have you seen him play, Sean?
No, but I've been told he plays very much like Antonio. Oh, okay. So because someone else wrote that, I put it in my copy about him.
I don't think he. I thought he was a big lad, like 6 foot.
So did I.
5, Sean.
Well, maybe I'm getting it mixed up with another one. But there was definitely one that played like... I would have to look
remember
back
now, buying from abroad, yeah? They have to have certain targets that have achieved now to get Brexit, the permit and everything else.
Yeah. So, how about Damari Gray? He used to be lively. I thought he'd have been good for us.
Yeah, Damari Gray was a winger, I think. Winger come strike. He started with Birmingham, then he's now at Leicester.
Yeah,
that's one.
Of course, Josh King. I'm not saying he's a replacement for Antonio. Scored 2 goals in the FA Cup. Suddenly he's appeared, and I was told by a Bournemouth fan that he's had back problems. He wasn't played by the manager.
But when you've seen him play, Sean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and he's had COVID. And he's had COVID. So that's some of the reasons.
You've seen him play.
Yeah, I have.
Does he strike you as an Antonio type player?
No, I said that.
Abdelazim is 6'2".
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So we're struggling here, aren't we?
Just to name players
that play that way, let alone those we might be able to buy. The only one I can come up with that we possibly get in January, possibly, maybe not, is Adama Traore.
I know the one. How about this Dyer guy who plays for the French thing, Reims?
Yeah, has he played for the French national team?
Probably not.
Right, see what I'm saying? Yeah, see, you keep looking abroad for the thing. And that's what I'm saying. Adama Traore, in and out of the Wolves team, but plays similar to Antonio with the pace and the power, could be a player that Moyes may think, I can turn you into a striker, son.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
But we're struggling here, aren't we?
We are struggling.
And what this does, and I'll get to my point now, is it then makes you think what Moyes is going to be like going down the line. Where are we heading? Because the one thing about yesterday's team,
like his own money.
Hold up. The one thing about yesterday's team, its average age was 28 years and 4 months old.
Yeah.
We've got the oldest squad, I believe, average age team in the Premier League. So while it's all right for the now, again, there seems to be not a lack of forward planning, but we could be going down another path where in 2 years' time, we've got another lot of problems that we've got to firefight.
Yeah. I get that. And maybe that's a good link on the other departure, Robert Snodgrass, who I know you were very fond of. David Moyes said he wouldn't stand in his way. He couldn't offer him a new contract. You couldn't guarantee him any game time. I think he'd played like 3 or 5 minutes the whole season. I can reveal now that I think the manager thought his legs are gone. And... you know, he was struggling with the pace. And we know the manager likes a runner. You've got to run if you want to play. What he said is, we did this for Robert. You know, he's well-respected in the dressing room. He's well-respected in the club. He's well-respected from the players. We did a deal. So basically, the fee was nominal. It was somewhere between 10 and 100 grand, I was told. It was absolutely nominal. It wasn't about the transfer fee. You know, obviously we get the 40 grand a week off the wages, and together with Allaire, it saves us £8 million a year. So there's £8 million a year in wages that Moyes can reinvest in a loan deal, unlimited. Although we're at the maximum domestic, there's an unlimited number of foreign people we can loan, subject to Brexit rules, as just said. So, you know. Let's go to you, Nigel, again. Do you begrudge Snodgrass?
Look, all I'll move? Say is if he'd gone to any other club, I doubt they'd done really well and everything else. But he's gone to that club and I hope he goes fucking down.
Oh, that is really... You like Snodgrass.
Yeah, but he's
really
gone to that club, hasn't he?
Oh, your hatred of Sam Oh, that's. I think it's a good sign.
Listen, I done me a favour this week because I got to improve one of Len's pictures. and I've got a lot of likes on Twitter for that. I'll just point out that, or a lot of, on Facebook, people seem to quite enjoy what I've done there with the picture to improve it.
So, Len, good move for the club. Good move for Snodgrass.
Well, if Snodgrass plays, it's a good move for him, isn't it? Might be his last 6 months in the Premier. Who knows?
I mean, it's fingers good to, crossed. I mean, I was told he's, he's a great in a relegation fight. He's a great guy to have in the dressing room, if nothing else. I'm not sure they're going to be paying £40,000 a week to have him in the dressing room, but I believe he gets a big bonus if he helps keep them up.
Well, like Nigel says, let's hope you don't get it.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Craig Dawson. Craig Dawson, the player that everyone slagged
off. Not everyone.
Well, a lot of people slagged off. I can reveal now, we have got an option to buy a nominal fee. I mean, I say a nominal fee, somewhere between 1 and 2 million. We can sign him at the end of the season. We've got an option to buy from Watford. And what a revelation he's turned out to be. Obviously, he comes on. People couldn't believe when he started. We haven't conceded a goal since he's been playing. Do you know?
Oh, wow. Fact,
no, I know that. 3 games, no goals conceded. Yeah. He scored 1 goal. His signing was about as welcome as Roger Johnson. You had Roger the Relegator. Now we've got Dawson the Revelator because he's been a revelation. As you say.
Good luck to him.
Even though he does seem to have a problem staying on his feet for 90 minutes.
Well, that's strange.
There's something going on there.
I agree. And again, the club won't talk to me about it. All this medical confidentiality malarkey. The first time, 19 minutes after Everton, he collapsed after doing an air shot. We first thought it was an embarrassment. And the manager said, he was just... You know, he needed sugar or food. He was just, and I was told, he's just not used to the Premier League. Well, he played quite a lot in the Premier League. I'm going to ask you how you saw it, but last night, again, there was no contact and he went down. Along come the medics with a little pink drink. I don't know what was in the pink drink. I'm not trying to suggest it was drugs or anything, but was it an energy drink or something? And he swigs this pink drink. I don't think it was gin. And suddenly he jumps up and he's all right. And obviously, he heads the match winner. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I've been told he's got no medical underlying condition.
Well, I've never done it.
What, collapse in a game?
Anyway, yeah.
Have you ever played for 90 minutes in a game?
I have a little run in the morning. I don't collapse.
Well, have you played a competitive game?
What difference does it make? It makes a size in a life. What do you think? It's just a Premier League thing that you're collapsing.
It's a level of effort, Len. Anyway, we're not going to solve this. We don't know it. I've saved the best for last, Nigel. The big news of this week, in fact, today and yesterday, is the appointment of 4 new directors. Now, I'm no special secret sleuth. Like a lot of people, on Company's House, I have email alerts on West Ham United Football Club and WH Holdings, any West Ham, basically, Company's House. So any time they release it, I'll get pinged an email. Not just that, I might do it on Ann Summers and Sullivan's and the London Stadium and everything, yeah? So ping, get an email yesterday. 2 new directors. The first one is David Sullivan, or David Edward Sullivan. Born in whatever 1997, so obviously the younger version, David Sullivan Jr. is known, or Dave, has joined the board.
I think there's a few other names.
Then I see a second director announced, Emma Benton Hughes, better known as Dave's mum.
I don't think she's better known as I am.
Hang on a minute. Don't drop down to the level of the Daily Star and the Mail Online, please. Or the partner of David Sullivan Senior, for a long time. So there you go. David Sullivan's put two of his family on the board. And you think, okay, fair enough. You know, he's the majority shareholder. He owns 51%. Says that maybe he's not going anywhere. And then today, a new email pops up. Oh, it's like buses. You wait around for ages and then four come along all at the same time. So there's two new people today. And at first sight, it's Daniel Cunningham and Charles Cross. And I'm thinking, Daniel Cunningham, I've heard that name. He's a West Ham fan. I follow him on Twitter. Oh, yes, he's Jacqueline Gold's
toy boy.
Husband.
Sorry. Yeah, not toy boy. Because he's 17 years younger than her. Dear.
So, obviously, he's David Gold's son-in-law. And I think, oh, yeah, I know Daniel Cunningham is. And then I start to think, well, who's Charles Cross? And funny enough, I did ask someone in the club, but at the same time, Nigel went, that's Charlie Cross. That's Gold's childhood friend. And then I did a little bit of digging. I mean, Nigel told me he was in Iron Men. You can maybe say what he's done. But then I did a digging, and there he is in the autobiography. So Pure Gold or whatever it's... No, that's your thing, isn't it? Whatever the name of the autobiography is by David Gold, Charlie Cross is in there. You know, childhood friends. Apparently he's in the director's box. I'm told both of them are passionate fans.
Yeah, Charlie, for what I can gather,
and Dan, passionate fans.
Not sure about Dan, but I mean, Charlie was the story I got told years ago was that David Gold hadn't spoke to him for years and years. Left Green Street, made his millions, went up to Surrey, lived it up, and I don't know if it was when he bought the club or started to reminisce about, wonder what happened to his old schoolboy mate. And I don't know if he got a private detective or something, but managed to track him down and find him and knocking on his and get someone to knock on his door. So.
Well, apparently he's in the director's box anyway.
Yeah, he's always. But
here's a funny story. So when I released this story on Twitter, someone came to me and said, I want an auction to be in the director's box. And Charlie was on our table. He said, here's a funny story. He said, he's a mad West Ham fan. He said, but his son is also a massive West Ham fan, but refuses to join him in the director's box because he likes to watch proper football, you know, from the stands. And Charlie rings him and talks to him and waves from the director's box while his son watches. So it does sound like proper West Ham fans. Daniel, I've always been told, is being a, you know, big West Ham fan before he met Jacqueline. And I'd like to think, from a David Gold's point of view, that you've got two fans on the board, which has got to be a good thing. And I think it shows people who are talking about...
Do you know, the way you said that, that's quite funny.
And I think... Hang on, let me finish my monologue. And I think it shows that people think they're about to sell up and go... It's not. This is a new dynasty. This is a family dynasty. It's like the Ming dynasty. It will go on for hundreds of years and be handed down from father to son. And they're not going anywhere quick, even when they die. Nigel.
You said like they've appointed two West Ham fans to the board. And, it, you know, if I'd have been quicker to get in, I could have gone with that. Had been a first, wouldn't it? Yeah, I think it, for me, it shows that actually they're not going anywhere. For me, it smacks of, well, not smacks of, I shouldn't say it like that, but this is planning. Obviously, they're both a certain age, not great health. If they'd caught something and I don't want to sound morbid, you know, but at the end of the day, if they'd have copped it, yeah, and died, it would lead to problems. And I think what they've done is that they've sort of done, you know, what's it called when you put someone...
Due diligence or...
Succession
planning. Yeah, succession planning.
Oh,
power of attorney type stuff, where I'd imagine it's wrote in that if something happens to this person, these people then get control of his voting rights, because that's what it comes down to. There's no way I can see Charlie Cross paying money to become a director of a club as much as Jacqueline.
Well, funny you should say that. Funny you should say that, because they're non-executive directors and they have to be paid. Now, a normal non-executive director usually gets paid anywhere between £5,000 and £20,000 a year. Now, they might only be paid £1 a year, but they will be employees as directors. Non-executive directors are expected to be at least paid their expenses.
But what I'm saying is, I don't think they've bought shares in the club, have they?
No, they haven't. So no, they haven't.
It's all about voting rights then, isn't it?
Well, you say that, but let me... There's two conspiracy theories, obviously, today. The first one, and I won't name him because it'd be unfair on Russ Budden because he sent it to me privately.
I thought you did.
Oh, right. Okay, I can't read it now. No, I was only joking. Of course I would out him. He asked, and he's not the only one. A lot of people said, do you think this is more about being able to watch West Ham games? Because there's a directive that only directors are allowed to watch West Ham games in lockdown. It's going a bit far for Dave Sullivan, Junior, Emma, Charlie and Dan to have to become directors just to watch West Ham games in lockdown. So to answer your question, your private question to me, Russ, no, I don't think that is the case. But thanks for asking it and apologies for outing you. Other people... messaged me to say that they thought it was something about tax planning or some other to sell the club in 2 years' time. And someone found an obscure rule that says if you want to sell a club, 2 years before you sell a club, you have to own 5% of the club in shares and 5% of the voting rights, right? And this is why they're putting more people on the board. But as I pointed out, it was an interesting point, but it was flawed in two reasons. First of all, they've joined the operational board and not the board where the shares are. So it's West Ham United Football Club, which is the operational board. The real board, WH Holdings, they're not directors of, and that would be the subject of the takeover bid, not the other one. So it's flawed in that way. The second reason is there are only six directors on that operational board before these other four joined, right? So now it's 10. So that's Tara Warren, Andy Mollett, Trip Smith, Karen Brady, David Gold, David Sullivan, right? If you divide 100 by six, right, you roughly get 16%. So each one of them had over 16% voting rights on their own anyway. So they were over that 5%. And of course, both David Gold and David Sullivan own over 5% of the shares separately anyway. So it doesn't really stack up. And in fact, Trip Smith owns over 5% of shares and 5% of voting rights.
So why do you think they're bought in then? Not bought in.
They're bought in. I just think they're trying to expand the board to have different views. So they don't... I think part of this is, you know, keeping it in the family. Let's be honest, right? Bit of nepotism. Because they own the shares. But part of this, you know, they're bringing in skills. So Dan's a financier. I don't know what Charlie does.
What does Dave do then?
Dave is a little... I think he was sort of sub-training to be an agent, actually. But he does. He knows a lot about being a playboy as well. We won't talk about Emma, because I think the Daily Star has done enough on that. She was a model. a glamour model. So, you know, it's their train set. They can do what they want with it. You can't... Lots of people are going, what do you read into it, Sean? What do you read into it? Nothing. It's their company. They own the shares. They've put more... They've kept it in the family by putting more people on the board. And it's the... And this is the key. It's the operational board. Not the holding company board where the main shareholders sit. So it's not about takeover. I don't think it's got anything to do with tax planning or inheritance tax or anything else. It is what it is. anything else before we move on?
No.
Nigel?
No, I think you've about covered it there. It's a big thing.
Small thing. We talked about WISA and their survey. So Hammers United have just started to release some of the first details. They've released the first article. So just before we came on air, I did ask whether they would reveal to me how many people took the survey. What do you reckon? Our survey says No, they're not prepared to tell me at this time. I don't know what I read into it. So I'll read you what they say, right? This is that within the last hour. I just said to them, when they released the things, they said, at present, we are just sharing the information from the article. Once we have provided the ISC with the breakdown from their members and the club has seen the data, we'll be sharing the all findings with supporters. What's the ISC? Is that the Independent Supporters Committee or whatever?
I don't know.
I'm not too sure.
But what is the Independent Supporters? The ISC?
Well, I assume it's SAB Mark III.
All right.
Running out of names, aren't they?
Yeah, but has that been announced? Who's involved in...
No. But I asked a club's... Oh, I'm not allowed to really talk about
that. Go on, then. You started now.
Well, I hear it's still not resolved, right? That's all I'll say. It's still not sorted. It's still not resolved. And I'm not saying anything because I'll get the person in trouble.
Well, look, at the end of the day,
it's still not resolved.
It'll be interesting to see. Some of these things you can make out of it what it is. It'd be interesting to see what the results are. I didn't bother to whistle one because I'm not being funny. When 600 people take it, it's totally irrelevant. And no 600 people probably took the Hamish United one. So I want to see how many people took the Hamish United one, what the results were, how many people. I want to know how many people took the club's one, yeah, and what the results were,
yeah,
and put them together and then see what. See what's what.
So here's an interesting, the one I replied to, the slide you put up is, how do you feel about the management of the club from a football, on the pitch perspective? And they've answered 80% said positive, 10% said neutral, and about 5% said negative.
That's when you do questions like that, though, when you put the answer up, you should caveat that by putting the date, because generally people answer that for around that time. Now, luckily for Moyes, it hasn't gone tits up, but it'd have been quite funny if we were doing well then, but it had gone tits up, and then it might have looked a bit strange. But
so, not a complaint, here's one piece of information. Here's one piece of information they did release, but without the overall number, it doesn't help us. They said that 43.22% respondents were members of Hammers United.
Wow.
That's quite interesting, really.
Here's another thing. 51.61% of respondents were not members of an FSA affiliated group.
So 49% were either members of WISA or Hammers United or the West Ham United Supporters Club.
Or Pride of Irons or all the other affiliated ones.
For me, I don't like percentages.
It doesn't tell me. Not to be funny, but I don't mean this disrespectful to Hammers United, so please don't take it that way. If it had been 20,000 people that filled out this survey, they would be shouting it from the rafters. So I don't think it's 20,000. If it's 43%, remember they say they have 17,000 members, you would be hoping, quick sum, that would, it's not 731,000. That is absolutely wrong, Sean. How do you use a calculator?
Well, look, if it was 20,000 people...
About 7,310. Yeah. So, in my view, I run the London Stadium survey. As you know, we've been anywhere between 6,000 and 11,000. I would hope that they have beaten that. If they really have managed to get this message out, they should be looking at, over 5,000.
Without going down the road to think, if they have beat it, but are we saying only, but 40, so say it's 10,000, yeah?
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic achievement, to be fair. Only 43% of that is their membership. What does that say about their membership? Not as Amers United, but as...
Well, it says that people... Look, and I don't think this is about their members. I think this is in general, as you know. It's apathy. Mm. People just don't want to fill out surveys.
But and this is the thing that worried me about them doing it, is that if they didn't get the numbers, the club can spin it in a way that it can cast a shadow of a doubt over their numbers claim.
I mean, maybe we need to ask Andrew afterwards. And you know, it's obviously some kind of media strategy. They've released one question.
Well, the thing to do is we'll get him back on when they're ready to release everything. Yeah. We'll get him back on. Maybe him and Paul Colburn together.
Well, funny enough, Paul is a regular on Claret & Hugh. Actually, Paul is often asking me questions. When we talked about the director one, he asked me a question on the forum of Claret & Hugh, and he's Paul is a regular reader and always asks questions and posts.
Well, you got to know what the enemy are doing, Sean, don't you?
Anyway, enough of that. It's time for this.
See, you're causing trouble now, Sean, aren't you? Because he wants his jingle back.
I don't care.
Dear, oh dear.
So I've said this, but Len on our little chat is going, did you put a question out? It would be a very short question time if you didn't put a question out.
Have you ever known me to not put a question out?
I can't see it.
Because I didn't put a question out. But never fear. Yeah.
Hold up.
Yeah. Never fear. My friends don't let me down. I have got questions to ask.
There you go.
Yeah?
So, Nicholas Harvey, because he said, we're not having a question. So I said, well, ask me now. So he's gone one. This is for all of us. Is there anything more out of Tanner than Sean's Cromer crab salad recipe? Two, Sean. I'm sure your secret sources told you. So how much did we pay for Halla, excluding the add-ons? That's true. You didn't find it. What is the truth? I don't believe it was 42 million.
Why do you say that?
Because I know the way Sullivan organises. He always does it with add-ons. Everything's add-ons and performance related and everything else. So
look, I've seen claims that, you know, false claims that it was made. He was a record signing without add-ons. There was no sell-on fee or anything else. And my understanding is, and I've asked this question directly, is it's as close as damn it to the 45 million quoted. So, yes.
Makes it worse. Then.
It was.
All right. Okay.
Well, it does make it worse. And, you know, if it would have made it better, because I said to him, this senior source, I said, you know, damage limitation time. Give me some details that would help with some damage limitation with the fans when this first came out. And, you know, we talked about the fee and we talked about the payment terms with the outbound, confirmed how much we'd paid, wouldn't confirm how much was still owed to Frankfurt, but in the process of that confirms how much we paid. So I've got no reason to doubt them or him.
Right, okay. Len.
Yes, mate.
Nicholas asks, will we buy a decent striker or will we end up with a pointless loan deal and then end up without a striker when Antonio's hamstring goes again?
We'll buy a striker. It'll be a purchase. It'll probably be... they probably won't have a Premier League experience. And I think it'll be better. He will prove to be better than Heller because he'll be someone that Moyes has been looking at. I'm not having all this, you know, there's no one about that. We'll buy a striker, in my opinion.
All right. Okay. Thanks for that. He then asked me a question. He says, brave decision to sell Heller without a replacement lined up, or will it prove to be foolhardy? Do I think it was Moyes' decision or Sullivan need the cash to pay for the next Haller instalment? Personally, I think... I'm not sure about Moyes. I think it was a club decision. I'd imagine that Moyes would have sanctioned it.
Moyes did sanction it. And just to be clear, the next Allaire payment is not due to the end of the season. Yeah. So we don't have to pay any more money to Allaire till to May.
How depressing.
You know. But you know, he sanctioned it. He said so. I mean, Moyes is not, he may be in many things, but he's not a liar. He said, look, we weren't expecting it. I wasn't planning for leave. An offer came out of the blue, and we felt we had to take it. You know,
I think he's right.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't covered the fact that it turns out Alan knew he was going 2 months ago, or he knew
Well, we obviously, he was talking to his old manager, but, you know.
Stuff like, I ain't going to criticise him for that, but I will criticise him for the performances then that he put in, where sometimes people were defending him and the way he played, and now it casts shadow on that doubt. Or it casts shadow on those performances that some of us try to defend. Because you think, you know, I always try and believe that football always tries 100%. When he comes out and goes, oh, we knew 2 months, blah, blah, blah. For me, it was like, well, did he really put himself about then? Didn't want to get injured? Did he coast through games? I'm not saying that's what he definitely did, but it casts a shadow of doubt.
I think changing your football nationality says everything about you personally.
Yes. Yes.
I've got a question, by the way. It was sent to me on
Nicholas finishes with Brady out.
Brady out. Okay.
Go on.
So I've got a question. I mean, it was sent to me on WhatsApp privately, so wouldn't it be fair on Stelios Cool Jazz just to read it out? He says, what's all this claptrap? If the stadium goes bust, we won't have a stadium to play in. The stadium has been going bust for years. So how come it's a big issue all of a sudden?
Who's made it a big issue?
Well, I actually said, not true. Where is this from? He still doesn't know he's on air. And I said, I know it's... it came from Gonzo.
It was a brilliant video.
He said, I was asked about it on a video Gonzo did, suggesting that if the stadium went bust, we won't have a stadium. So let me just...
Well, look, I'll do it quickly, yeah? The stadium won't go bust because it's a government-owned stadium, yeah? So the government...
Well, no, that's not true. That is not true. I know Stadium Inside Out. I once advised the club on the stadium contract. Mm-hmm. The stadium company can go bust. It's a private company. However, our saviour, Karen Brady out, wrote a clause in that the ultimate guarantor is the government. So it doesn't matter if Stadium 185 or Stadium E20 goes bust or LLDC goes bust, etc., that the stadium must be guarantored for West Ham's contract by the central government. And I'll tell you what, you may say lots of things about her. She pulled a blinder.
Oh, no, but then it always goes...
Says they can never go bust because they would have gone bust a long time ago, let me tell you, to get rid of the West Ham contract.
Yeah, but that's why it's a good business deal for West Ham Business Club, not West Ham Football Club. But also what it shows is how much they really want to buy the stadium, because if they really wanted to buy it, they'd have been happy to let the stadium go bust and pick the stadium up on the cheap. But the fact that they're prepared to let the stadium go bust and then the government has to step in and basically become the landlord says all you need to know that these owners never want to buy that stadium.
Hilariously, I did say to Stel, by the way, we're recording a podcast at the moment, any questions? He said, well, I might as well ask, is there any truth we would be honest if the stadium goes bust? Yeah. Who would take control of the stadium if the current continue? No, and let me tell you, and I ran this story, and someone gave me, you ran that again last year, but yeah, I repeat stuff because people miss it. West Ham will not buy the stadium. I ran a story last week. It lost £29 million, right? Just before.
But Sean, COVID, we've been saying this since 2015.
Yeah, but I'm just repeating because people keep on asking it. So I ran a story, it lost money, and everyone goes, we should buy the stadium. I can see that happening. We're going to buy the stadium, then sell the club, right? The club would not buy the stadium unless there was a massive subsidy of at least £200 million. There, even if you.
And if, if that happened, remember, tell people what would happen if that was the case.
Well, number one, it's not palatable for the politicians, particularly the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. But you've got all kinds, even out, we're outside of Europe, there's all kinds of regulations. State aid would have a problem with, and FIFA would probably get involved in everything. But the reality is you cannot buy out UK Athletics, Delaware North, and by the way, Vinci is still involved. They still do a lot of the facilities management. It's probably £1 billion worth of onerous contracts, including West Ham, that you would have to buy out. The likelihood is, at some point in the next 10 years, West Ham take over the operation and become the operator. So I see us taking over London Stadium 185 that was run by Vinci and running our own stadium like Man City does. Definitely. We could save money for the taxpayers and for it. But the ownership, like Man City, that still owns the Manchester City Council, would be retained by the public sector because they would not want to embarrass Boris Johnson and all the others that made these silly decisions in the first place of where we are.
Well, Sadiq Khan wouldn't mind embarrassing him.
Well, I don't think Sadiq had very much to do with it beyond that it's still mismanaged. And you know, I did ask someone, a senior source in the club, and said they're just not very good at running businesses. And that shows, you know, the only reason they've saved money this financial year, by the way, is there's been no one in it.
So yeah, hold up, that last financial figures, when did that cover up?
Goes up to the end of March.
Yeah. So actually, it's the next set that come out this time next year. Everybody began, oh, didn't the stadium did all right, didn't they? They only lost a couple of million pounds.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Yeah. I was telling someone that yesterday that actually, the stadium operators are quite happy at the moment because we've managed to build and operate a stadium that's used more, possibly more than any recent Olympic stadium has ever been used, but is actually only makes or it loses less money when it's empty than actually, than the fact that because so the cost of legacy is actually crippling, that when you think we actually won the Olympics off the back of so-called legacy, the cost of that legacy is what's causing the bloody problems.
Well, we're at £1 billion now. To build the stadium twice cost over 700 million. The total losses for the operator the owner, E20, are now something like 290 million with the latest 30 million this year. So if we're not at £1 billion, we soon will be next year. £1 billion of taxpayers' money has been invested. And don't get me wrong, it was built for the Olympics. So let's not forget the first £500 million was to host the Olympics. And you don't expect to get
But I don't want to worry people.
Then we rebuild it again, and then money gets thrown down the drain.
Yeah, but I don't want to worry people. But let's just remember that the person that signed off on this contract to West Ham now runs the country, not just London. So if he's that good,
let's not get party political. If he's that good, because let's remember Tessa Jowell Livingston.
They're all to blame.
And Seb Coe, and I'm trying to think of other people involved, all signed off on this, including the Labour part.
Yeah, but in their defence, when they originally planned it, it was going to be a 25,000-seater athletic stadium. It weren't until David Cameron turned up in 2010, or when did the Tories When did David Cameron win the election? 2010, wasn't it?
Don't turn this into a political podcast.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
No, but that's what happened. Yeah. That let's get this right. That's what happened in 2010.
Let's be honest. We're all Tories on this podcast at the moment. So suddenly, don't betray your roots, Nigel.
Don't be putting me. I'm definitely not.
You used to be a Tory. I used to be.
But or I have voted Tory in the past. But believe me, they will never get. As far as I'm concerned, Brexit's been achieved. They will never get one of my votes again.
All right. Anyway, it's not a party political broadcast. No. It is a football
right,
broadcast.
Next question.
Bring it back to the football. Yeah.
Blah blah blah. You're doing a pod tonight? If not, but can I ask yous? Yeah. So this is the question. I want to ask whether you think that Premier League footballers should have to play in conditions like last night. Now, wait, he says the reason he asks is because he's seen the point of view expressed by one or two people, one probably on West Ham till I die. So, obviously, it's possible people have been complaining that apparently Premier League players shouldn't play in those conditions, i.e. the pitch.
Oh, what a load of old baloney. I mean, the only thing I would say from a medical position is if they were getting injured from the pitch, I would say, no, it's not on and we should expect to play a certain level. But this is the magic of the FA Cup, right? If they're not getting injured, tough luck. Let them, you know, slum it for a while and see how non-league football is played. And that's what Mikel Antonio said. He said, you know, he owes everything to non-league football. As you probably know, he was at Tooting and Mitcham. And he thought it was magic and paid tribute to Stockport County for last night. Short answer from me. Len?
Nah, I think they should play. We haven't got much magic left in football, have we? So let's not take everything out.
As bad as that pitch was last night, I will direct you to the big match we visited on a Saturday morning and have a look at some of the pitches they played on. And believe me, that was like a carpet last night compared to pitches in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, it makes me wonder whether we get injuries more on pitches now because they are like carpets, whereas no one got injured yesterday.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it?
How do you know that? How do you know no one got injured? Everyone came through it.
When you watched the game.
Yeah, it's sort of a giveaway, really.
you say that, but often, you know, the aches and pains come through the next day and suddenly you're, I couldn't train or you know, tomorrow.
Oh, right, okay.
We'll see.
All right.
You know, they might have got one of those fireworks splinters in their eye or a stick from the rocket might have hit.
Oh, right. Well, they were away scared, according to you. So,
well, Mark Noble in particular, scared shitless.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Dan 31 60 43 40.
Oh, is that Dan Cunningham, the new director, or not?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Because he would know the answer to this question because he asked, "Did we sell Haller to pay for the team's travel costs to Stockport?"
No. They got the bus.
No, we just sold a kidney, that's all. Next up is Lincoln Hammer, Paul T. He says, hello, lads. He says, not sure what the question you're asking this week, but he's been watching Sky Sports reruns recently.
Oh.
And noticed that compared to years ago, there aren't any lobbed from distance goals or diving headers anymore. That's my question is, why?
That is a good point. The lobbed goal has disappeared.
You know why?
We don't play our line or something?
No. And this is the theory, yeah? So, I think the average height of a goalkeeper when football goals were invented or the size was set down in law was 5'7".
Wow.
Yeah?
I don't go back that far.
No. So, if we fast forward to the 70s... Yeah, the average height of a goalkeeper, I believe, was about 5'11". Now, this may shock people, but I think Ray Clements was only 5'11". Peter Shilton was, I don't think Peter Shilton was 6 foot. So it was rare to have a keeper 6'2", 6'3". I think Parks was quite tall, but I think Phil's only 6'2". So if you fast forward nowadays and look at goalkeepers, 6'5", 6'6", goalkeepers are taller, more difficult to lob them. I would, if I was a football lawmaker, look at increasing the sizes of goals.
Really?
Well, because if you look at the goals were invented when goalkeepers, well, the average height of a goalkeeper was around 5'7", 5'8". And now they're like 6'2", 6'3". You know, there's a big difference there. So, hence why if you look, but it's possible that more penalties are saved for that reason. Because the keepers are bigger, and so they can reach into the corner with their dives. It's just a theory. It could be true, could be not. Can you disprove it, though?
No.
No.
Any more Twitter?
No, that's it for Twitter.
I've been playing with the Twitterati. Obviously, I've been posting pictures of our new directors, and I've been getting some quite, not abusive, but people have suggested, I mean, we've now got 10 directors in that company, that we have, you know, we'll soon have more directors than first team. So the suggestions of the next three directors are Brady's husband, me, and Jim White. if I was called upon to serve, I would serve, make no doubt about it. But no, I haven't been asked. So, and my name's not Gold or Sullivan, so I don't think I will be asked to become a director. Sorry.
No?
No.
Not in the future?
I don't think so, no. No, not unless I come into a bit of money and, you know, buy in like Terry Brown and Daniel Harris has. But apart from that, I think, yeah, you know, you have to be in the family or be in the know. Let's talk about propaganda. So yous guys recorded last weekend with Alan Avitt guest. I've just listened to it. It was a good listen. You went over your hour. A little bit of abuse for me, I must say, Len. I did see the dig, but I, you know, no publicity is bad publicity, as they always say.
You mean all publicity is good past publicity?
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, give it a listen. Propaganda. If you know an out-of-towner or an in-towner who would like to be a guest, make some suggestions. It's like a nomination round. But yeah, I enjoyed the last one. It's supposed to be an hour. Went on for an hour and 16 minutes because the twos then were talking about the bond scheme, something that Alan said he knew nothing about. I don't know about the bond scheme. So Nigel and Len proceeded to tell him for the next 15 minutes. But anyway, it's a good listen. Give it a listen. We're on episode 4 now of A Propaganda, and I'm sure another one will be out soon. I think that only leaves for predictions. Any other business?
Any other business. Obviously, last week, people would have heard me reading out Dodsy's question. I don't know if we could say, poor old Dodsy got took very ill with the plague.
COVID. Yeah. No, it's not the plague. It's not a Black Death or anything. It's COVID. Yeah.
So it perhaps made my joke seem in my voice seem in poor taste. So I'd just like to apologise to Dodsy and say, I'm doing this, Tommy.
The Mickey. Is he out now?
Now you want to run for recovery. I wish you and the wife all the best.
Is he out of the hospital now?
He is out.
Oh, good. Good.
He's got fully recovered.
This boy can type, yeah? Because in 1 minute, he has sent this. All right, my handsomes, how's you doing? Hopefully today, Nigel will read my question out without Sean and Len having to remind him that he'd forgotten me.
Yeah, true.
Sean, he says, what's the reason for appointing Evil at the board other than she's a porn star and used to fucking people, so we'll quite fit
A lady's past is a lady's past. I think that is absolutely outrageous to bring up.
I should have vetted that.
She was a model. I like to ask a question back, Dodsey. How did you catch COVID with your lady wife if you followed all the rules and didn't break social distancing? There you go. That's my question to you.
All right, there you go. He then goes on to say the pitch was a clear leveler last night. However, he thought the fireworks for the young 15-year-old in intensive care after being hit by the police was a nice touch. He says, thank you for all the kind words from more than just the podcast listeners to my incarceration in hospital with COVID,
and I'll be covering it slowly.
Get well soon, Dodsey.
Brady out. Yeah.
Brady out.
He's popping pills like nothing, apparently.
He does travel quite a lot of places. I don't like to cast aspersions, but I don't mean to be wrong. But everybody who catches COVID, right, at some point has broken social distancing rules because that's not true, actually, because it could mean one of their household has broken. So in someone broke social distancing rules, otherwise no one would ever get COVID, right? So every infection is someone who broke,
to be fair, to him,
social distancing
rules. I think his daughter's a nurse, Sean, so it's possible.
Yeah, it's bad to say.
Does his daughter still live with him? Yeah,
possibly.
Okay, all right. Well, if that's the case and he called it off, his daughter lives with him and not another household, then I apologise.
All right, well done. Next up is Dave Trivett. He says, evening, everyone. Just a quick one. Last night was another tough watch. Bad conditions. He thinks Antonio shouldn't have played, but he was happy with the result. And the fact that Moisey seems to be taking the cup serious. Brady out.
Did Antonio touch the ball in the end?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't think he should have been risked last night.
No, I
just saw him on that pitch coming down with a hamstring and going, oh, my God. But anyway. How are you getting on with Super 6, Nigel?
Well, perhaps I should revert to your tactics, but I'm not going to go down that road of 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0.
Well, it works, though, doesn't it? Because I'm in the top 10.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. There's still loads of games.
I still outscore every single week. I outscore you, just to say. I'm moving ahead because how many did you score this week?
Was it 6? You got 8.
Yeah. I got 8. So, you know, as you say, but every week I outscore you. So
yeah,
I'll give you a little tip. It might be a marathon, not a sprint, but at one point, just this is how it works. You need to score more points than me.
Yeah,
I hate to point that out, but that's the way it works.
Patience, right? My friend. Patience.
Tortoise and the hare, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
All right, let's go to predictions. Burnley at the London Stadium.
Burnley or West Ham?
Oh, you love to take that.
No, I do think it's going to be 1-0 West Ham, though. That's a good thing. So I'm happier to get in early.
Is this a Saturday 3:00 game?
Imagine that.
No, it's not. It's a Tuesday.
What?
I think it is. I think it's something weird.
So it's 7 days' time, the next game.
I think so. Let me just check on that. I'm going to go 2-0 West Ham, by the way, while I just check that.
It's
so
3:00 Saturday, Sean. I don't want to disappoint you. We are
playing it is
Tuesday.
I thought, well, I knew we had a game on Tuesday, and for some reason...
West Brom.
Yeah, sorry, it's West Brom. For some reason, I'm getting those mixed up. I knew we were playing on Tuesday, but you're right. We're playing on Saturday against Burnley.
I think we've still got 5 games left in January.
Yeah, so we play on the Tuesday the 19th against Robert Snodgrass and Sam. Northern girls love gravy. There's your Ruddy Bubbles. And then we play...
They talk like that.
And then we play Palace away on Wednesday, the 27th of January. And then on the last day of January, Sunday the 31st, we play Liverpool at home.
And you forgot about Doncaster. Don't worry about it.
Doncaster hasn't been put into the schedule yet.
Well, so far, it's on the weekend before the Palace game.
Is it? Yeah. Yes. Wow, that's going to be quite a intensive few weeks, isn't it?
That's what I said. It's the middle of January and we've got 5 games still in January.
Wow, that will give us something to talk about. Anyway, that's all time we have tonight. Oh, what do you mean? What have you got now?
Have I given my prediction yet?
Oh, yeah, you haven't. No.
Right, thank you very much.
Well, it takes so long. Don't dilly dally. Yeah,
0-0.
It could be right.
I've been Sean.
Sean
Nigel
what?
Has been. Nigel has been.
Gone enough fun. I think to say after 5 years gone.
And Canning Town Len has been.
Two.
And we're
think
up.
About the answer before you ask. Always forget that.
Yeah, and we're under the 90 minutes that we promised Nigel before we start. Come on, you Irons.
Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast.
On the advice of counsel, I invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination and respectfully decline to answer your question.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.